Three good reasons why you should buy a Skoda Fabia this summer. Incredible 0% APR representative finance, £500 towards your deposit, and £500 worth of free fuel. The Skoda Fabia. It's a no-brainer. Find your nearest retailer at skoda.co.uk. With Solutions Personal Contract Plan from Skoda Financial Services, 18s and over subject to status, T's and C's and exclusions apply. For free fuel T's and C's, check skodafreefuel.co.uk. Offer ends 30th September.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of Rise Up, See Red, your Arizona Cardinals podcast hosted by myself, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. USA Today's Arizona Cardinals NFL wire site. My co-host Seth Cox is on the line. He's from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and one of the hosts from the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. We are coming to you on a Tuesday. We're recording on a Tuesday now. You won't hear it until maybe third Wednesday, maybe Thursday. And we're going to talk about, hey, it's a good Thursday because the Cardinals are back on track. They're not 0-2. The sky is no longer falling. And not only is it not falling, it feels like everything is right in the world again because the Cardinals rolled to a 40-7 blowout win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a game in which a new star emerged in the name of Marcus Cooper. There was more highlight reels from David Johnson. There were four interceptions of Jameis Winston. So Jameis Winston goes from throwing four touchdowns in week one to four interceptions in week two. And on top of that, if we want to talk a little bit about that also, that first week loss against the New England Patriots doesn't look nearly so bad with the way that Jimmy Garoppolo looked against the Miami Dolphins. So not only that, as we go to get started, but everything evened out for the Cardinals. They lost their first week game. But guess what? Seattle already has a loss. Carolina has a loss. Green Bay's got a loss. So really, everything is right in Cardinals world, wouldn't you say, Seth?
Yeah, it's been it was a nice response, and it was one of those games where you saw exactly what you needed to see from the Cardinals in all phases of the game. Even Drew Butler looked great. So, yeah, I think it was the response that we were all hoping for, waiting for, and now, you know, we are on to Buffalo. And even though Bruce Arians may not have been satisfied, I think all of us innocent fans out here, we'll take 33 offensive points every week and go home happy.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and get started. What we're going to talk about in tonight's show on this the edition of Rise Up See Red, which is brought to you by FanEssentials.net. FanEssentials.net, which you can get the gear of your favorite NFL team sent right to your door. You don't have to look for it at all. So you can have it shipped to your door every month without having to look for it. It's a great gift that you can gift somebody. And it's, you know, plans start at only $34.99 a month. They send you a box of gear every single month. And Rise Up See Red listeners get a deal. If you head to fanessentials.net and sign up, you can use the promo code CRED, that's for our show, CRED, and get 15% off of your first order. Give it a shot. Again, that's fanessentials.net, where everything for the fan you can get there. So we're going to talk about the weirdness of the NFL over 2 weeks and just how, you know, and for me, football, like we've talked about, football's dumb. I don't get it. I don't, you know, I love football, but sometimes I wonder why I even try. We're talking about the Cardinals win, the reactions, well, the players who played well, Bruce Arians, who had some really scathing, you know, for a team that won 40-7, he had more criticism than they had when they lost to the Patriots in week one. And then we'll look ahead to the game against Buffalo this weekend. an early East Coast game against a winless team who is kind of desperate right now, and a coach who's going to be coaching for his life, it sounds like, or for his job, not literally his life. So let's go get started. Let's talk about the things going on around the NFL. Did week two make any sense to you? Because it didn't make any sense to me.
I think the only thing that became clear is that the best teams reside in the AFC. And that's not a shot at the Cardinals, the Vikings, the Packers, the Seahawks, or any other team you want to throw in that contention, into that contender status in the NFC. But right now, I don't know if anybody in the NFC beats a healthy New England, Pittsburgh, or Denver.
And nobody's being or no one's beating a beat up New England team because Rob Gronkowski still hasn't played. We haven't seen Tom Brady, no Deion Lewis, no Ninkovich, and Garoppolo. Now, you know, not only did Jimmy Garoppolo do well against the Cardinals and he looked decent, he was carving up that Miami team before he got hurt. And then after that, Jacoby Brissett goes and they score a touchdown. And I was left. I was there in the media room before. I was there in the press area before the game. I'm wondering, can literally anyone play quarterback for the Patriots and be successful? Have we been conned for the last 13 years into thinking that Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time when really it's the biggest con ever? I'll laugh at that because it's not true. But what if Tom Brady were not the same quarterback with another
team? Right. And that's the whole thing is, like, that's what's been so weird about the NFL this year. Like you said, obviously you have the Tom Brady factor in New England and the fact that they're still balling. But, you know, I'd even throw Houston, the Texans, in there. You know, the Chiefs come screaming back after a week one. You know, they get down, 20-some-odd points.
Yeah.
To San Diego, they come screaming back, winning overtime, and then they just come out and, you know, lay an egg. But in the same vein, Houston looks, I mean, Bill O'Brien is really the quarterback whisperer, isn't he? Like, look at Brock Osweiler, looks like that was they underpaid him. You know, the defense isn't fully healthy yet with J.J. Watt, who's allegedly at 80%. Like, so yeah, the NFL is just in a weird spot where, to me, it looks like right now the NFC teams that we all thought, like, are the best teams are trying to find themselves, while these AFC teams are just, I mean, just rolling.
Well, Pittsburgh looks unstoppable. Cincinnati can go toe-to-toe with anyone. You know, unfortunately, they played a Pittsburgh team in Pittsburgh who is unstoppable. New England looks unstoppable. Denver's got a dude. Nobody's, you know, what's a Trevor Siemian? They're still winning football games. That's another team. Does it matter who plays quarterback? I mean, they had Brock Osweiler.
Not with that defense. I mean, that defense,
Peyton Manning won a second ring, but if you think, that might have been – he was probably the worst quarterback in the NFL last year.
At least the worst one that made it to the playoffs.
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe outside of whoever was running things for Houston at the end last year.
But. Brian Hoyer, who might be playing very soon. Oh,
yeah.
The NFL – and so we've got the Seattle. No, the NFC, you know, I will say Carolina looks every bit the Carolina team that we think they are. They lost. I mean, they should have won that game in Denver. They completely demolished a 49ers team that looked like world beaters in World Week One. But we thought, oh crap! I on my power rankings, I dropped the Rams all the way to the bottom after their loss to the 49ers because I don't expect the 49ers to be any good. Then 49ers look like the 49ers we thought they'd be. They're pesky. I mean, they can score some points.
Their offense is really good. Blaine Gabbert. Who knew?
He's Alex Smith. He's kind of like Alex Smith. And if he's playing smart, you can win with him, I guess. You can at least score points. But yeah, I mean, the Rams, what is with the Rams? I don't understand them, how they look so just dreadfully awful against the 49ers and then go and beat the Seattle Seahawks. And
Seattle just looks lost on offense right now. I mean, their defense still looks great. I mean, they've just pummeled two teams the last 2 weeks, but their offense just looks lost. I mean,
And guess who's starting at left tackle? Guess who's playing left tackle?
Exactly.
Bradley Saul. Thank you, Seahawks. I mean, Bradley, you're a great guy and a wonderful man, and I'm glad you're in the NFL making money for your family, but I'm glad you're not starting for the Cardinals anymore. And I thank you even more for going to the Seahawks and starting for them, because we know how that ends. Please be starting when you come to town so you can meet Chandler Jones. That would be wonderful. Please, Bradley, be the starter.
Exactly.
And Russell Wilson, how long can he play on that? I mean, what happens if he goes down? Because a hobbled Russell Wilson doesn't look all that good. And they don't have anybody behind him. So that's a team. And especially with the Cardinals lost, we were kind of worried they were going to be behind the eight ball. Now everything's even. I mean, everyone in the NFC West is 1-1. Now they get the Vikings. I mean, there's three undefeated teams in the NFC. So you got the Vikings, the Eagles, and the Giants. And no one believes in the Eagles or the Giants because they play in the NFC East.
I believe in the Eagles. No, I'm just kidding. I like Carson Wentz. So
yes. I just don't believe in him.
No, not yet. Winning at all. No,
I don't believe in him yet. And if Adrian Peterson is injured and still Sam Bradford, I still don't believe in. I still think they're the Rams. And if they're not, I think they're the Rams of the last few seasons, especially since they got Sam Bradford there. If Adrian Peterson's not playing, I don't believe them in them at all. Now Bradford is.
He looks amazing.
I don't know what Bradford is. But is he gonna be more than a novelty? Because really, maybe Norv Turner's what he needs. Maybe it's Norv Turner. Because guess what, he's a good guy. He's a good offensive dude.
Yeah.
So, football doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense. So.
It doesn't right now. It really doesn't. But that's what makes it fun. That's what makes it so much more fun than basketball. Like, everybody knew it was going to be the Warriors and Cavs. Like, before the season started, everybody knew that. The only question was, could the Cavs beat the Warriors, which made the NBA Finals fun, but there was nothing enjoyable about the journey to get there because it was almost a foregone conclusion. I mean, yeah, the 73 and 9 Warriors was enjoyable to watch history be made, but then they didn't even win the finals. So they're not the greatest team ever because they didn't even win the finals. So it's just one of those situations where the NFL is, that's why it's king, is because the names are usually the same, but you look at it, I mean, you had Carolina last year, you had Seattle against New England, which was an epic game. Obviously Seattle, Denver sucked, but before that, again, you just had so many enjoyable different aspects that come along every year. Yes, a lot of the names are the same, but it's, like we said, the AFC is probably going to end up being three teams. Mm-hmm. You might get Houston in that mix, and that might be your, AFC semifinals is Houston and Denver and Pittsburgh and New England, but it's still going to be enjoyable because you have no idea which one of those four teams is going to win. And in the NFC, I mean, right now it's a complete coin flip. Like, is Minnesota for real? Is Carolina still the best team in the NFC? Or did Denver give us the blueprint on how to beat them? And who can execute that blueprint? Is it only Seattle and Minnesota with their pass rushers? Can the Cardinals get to Cam Newton and mess him up enough? What's the best way for the Cardinals to get to the Super Bowl? All those questions are in play. Whereas, like I said, other sports, it's like, well, it's going to be, the Dodgers and baseball because they – have a $500 million payroll, and just, that's what makes football fun.
It really is. Well, let's go ahead and get started. Next up on Rise Up Sea Red, let's actually get into this football game that the Cardinals won. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and hey, the Cardinals won a football game and won in convincing fashion. They looked like the Cardinals should look at least after the first quarter, because the first quarter was a little, at least it wasn't a disaster. And we talked off the air about this. It went really well because the Cardinals got an early lead and then they just piled on. They didn't have to play even. They got a lead. They kept the lead and then the points piled on. And that is classic Cardinals football, a team that plays really well when they strike first. And then they continue to pile it on because we saw with other teams, if they have their heels back at all, and I think very, very much so when Bruce Arians talked about how everyone was kind of holding their breath last week, it wasn't so much it was because of the Patriots, or is it even anything that happened before the game? It's how the game started. And, you know, one of the first big plays of the game was that touchdown pass from Garoppolo to Chris Hogan when Brandon Williams blew the coverage, and then they were down a touchdown, and so they froze a little bit, as they've done in other times. But we finally got to see the Cardinals that we were used to seeing, at least especially early on last year, and then even through the late stretch of the regular season, they were just mowing people down.
Yeah, and, you know, something we've talked about before on this show, and it's the truth, and it's the honest-to-goodness truth, is the Arizona Cardinals are so much better of a team when they're playing with a lead. And they are, you don't want to say unbeatable, but defensively they play so much more, what's the word I'm looking for?
They're much looser.
Yeah, they play so much more confident, and they look like a team that knows that they're the best team in the NFL. Even if they're not, maybe, they play like it, and they behave like it. And they have, you know, that quote-unquote swagger about them where they're just like, yeah, I dare you, throw that pass, see what happens. You know, I dare you to drop back and throw the ball 54 times or whatever they did. And it's just, it's a completely different mindset and a different look than what it was when you have them playing catch up, where everybody's tight and they're waiting for somebody else to make a play. And then you have certain guys like Patrick Peterson or Tyrann Mathieu, or even to an extent like a Tony Jefferson, overreaching, and instead, you know, they're out of position, and then all of a sudden the Cardinals are giving up big plays on 3rd and 19 and 3rd and 11, and, you know, teams are getting first downs. And so it's just such a different mindset and mentality. And when you watch it, you see the difference.
So let's kind of talk about, let's look at the offensive side of the ball, because early on it was better, but they weren't completely in sync. And yes, they put up numbers. They had 416 yards overall, 20 first downs. They, you know, they converted on 6 of 14 on third down. They had 101 yards on the ground. They got 308 yards passing from Palmer. He was very effective. No interceptions, so now he's got 5 touchdowns and no picks through 2 games. He looks very much – he didn't look dominant like he did at points last year, but he looked very efficient and very smart with the football. But even still, guess what? Bruce Arians was not pleased with the offense. They left, I mean, they scored the 33 points, but they left points on the board, according to him. There were some mistakes. We saw John Brown be a non-factor. We saw Michael Floyd kind of not
be, I mean, he's really not been a, yeah, he's really not been a factor outside of the touchdown and the one long catch.
Darren Fells looked terrible. I mean, their tight ends
look completely lost. I mean, they just have this season for whatever reason. You know, we all expected so much.
And David Johnson, according to Arians, didn't play all that well. Yes, he had some. Now, yardage-wise, he was great. In fact, he did something that hasn't been done since 1979. He combined with over 130 yards from scrimmage in the first 2 games of the season, each of the first 2 games, something that hadn't been done since Otis Anderson, their all-time leading rusher, did it in 1979. He looks like he's been solid in the pass, like really good in the passing game, been solid in the rushing game. He hasn't broken out with a just special rushing performance yet, though there's been highlights. But there were mistakes. I mean, you can't deny that. Now, I heard on the radio today kind of what Arians is harping on, some of those mistakes. They're like, come on, give them a break. They scored. I mean, there were 33 offensive points. They walloped the team. I get it. I get what he's doing, because those mistakes will come back to haunt them later, especially if they are in a tight game.
Well, and you look at it, and again, this is something that we've talked about, the starting slow. Now, it's a tough stat because they scored with – let me look here. They scored at the where did they score at? They scored like, 6 seconds into the second quarter. So they technically didn't score in the first quarter, but they were right there. I mean, they were just right there. But then the defense comes back the very next series and gives them a short field. And they get the ball at the 19-yard line, and they gain, they run six plays, gain 14 yards, and they can't score a touchdown. That's the stuff Arians is talking about right there. Like, you can't have your defense give you a 19-yard field and not be able to score. Like, especially in a game where you're clearly the superior team. And they were clearly the superior team. And that's what Arians is harping on. And then the next series – they kind of flip field position again, and the Cardinals go 3-and-out. And all of a sudden now, you ran 9 plays in the second, or 10 technically. You ran 9 plays in the second quarter, total 23 yards, and you couldn't make anything happen. Now, they came out – the best thing we saw was that they're – is back, and they came out with 3 minutes to go in the second quarter, and they went 68 yards for a touchdown. Then they again got the quick score to Jerron Brown, the second best receiver on the team right now, and scored another touchdown. That, and then obviously they came out in the first half or the second half, the Buccaneers went down. They scored their only touchdown of the game. The Cardinals responded very nicely. They went down, 53 yards, kicked a field goal. That's a nice response drive when you're up 24-7. That's a really nice response to go back down and just get more points. But again, I think that's what he's talking about is, yeah, they scored 33 points, but, a lot of those points were left on the field. They didn't make the plays when they had the chance to. They only got 3 points instead of 7. You can even talk about the missed extra point after the interception return for a touchdown by Marcus Cooper. Like, just little things right now, and maybe this is Arians understanding that they don't need to buy into themselves right now, and that they need to be more like New England, where every game they want it to be perfect and not the, oh, look, we beat them 40-7 type thing, where it needs to be more like, oh, look, we beat this team 55-0, and that's the way it should have been. We were clearly the superior team. And I think that's what it is right now for Arians.
Yeah, and I totally get that, especially since they haven't accomplished anything. And the characters on the team, they do get real emotional and real fired up, and they have a lot of fun when things are going well. But you look at a New England team, when they're up and they're winning, they're happy, but it never looks, at least to me, it never looks like they are overly happy or over. They're just like, hey, I'm just taking very – it's very workmanlike. But when you have guys like Patrick Peterson, and you've got Chandler Jones and a Tony Jeff, those are things that are going to happen. So that's what makes this team in some ways likable, because they do show their emotions.
They're
likable.
NFL robots.
Right.
They're not NFL robots, and that, like you said, that makes them likable. That makes them enjoyable to watch. But on the flip side, if they're the emotional high and low types, like you said, that could potentially, we saw what happened in Carolina, and I'm not saying that's going to happen, But it is definitely a
it's in their DNA.
It's in their DNA where you have seen them not, you know, when things aren't going well, they tend to overwork themselves instead of playing within themselves. And that's, you know, that's what they're trying to avoid right now. They're trying to make it where, you know, and perfection's really not achievable in the NFL. It's just not. But it also means that there's always room for improvement. And I think that's where Arians is really just harping on.
And with that, we can't go any further without talking about the newest star, the newest Kime time move, and that is the acquisition of Marcus Cooper, who came into the game and put his, you know, a guy that was a seventh round pick a few years ago was traded to the Cardinals for a seventh round pick 2 years from now. And did they just steal a starting quarterback from the Chiefs, a starting cornerback that is from the Chiefs? Because after one game, if we're going to overreact, we just hosed. Especially if we look at this way. This is year four, so he plays well this year. He potentially could be a free agent, you know, after this year, and they're ready to have Brandon Williams take over, Justin Bethel take over at the starting quarterback. They let him walk. He figures into the compensatory formula, and they net a seventh-round pick essentially back for him. Guess what? They gave up absolutely nothing for a guy who helped them win a championship potentially.
Right, and the thing with Marcus Cooper has always been that he has talent. It's just that he is – what's the word I'm looking for? Limited. Talent-wise. And if you look at the interceptions, that's a great example of what I'm talking about. You and I talked about it before the show. The first interception, he was in a trail technique situation where he's not trying to make a play on the ball. He wasn't. He was in a trail technique where all he was going to do was make a tackle. I think it was even short of the line of scrimmage. I'm not sure exactly what the down and distance was or anything like that, but you know, he was going to make a tackle. And Jameis Winston just threw a terrible pass. It wasn't like he made a, you know, great break on the ball. It wasn't like he, you know, made a play that he came through the wide receiver and, you know, or won a 50-50 ball. No, I mean, it literally was, he was in a trail technique and Jameis Winston basically threw the pass to Marcus Cooper instead of, I believe it was Vincent Jackson, but it might have been Mike Evans on the play.
And, you know, and that's the interception statistic is always one that's really hard to get a gauge for, because interceptions come in all sorts of – a lot of them are just bad throws. Some of them are tipped. So it just happens to be in the right place in the right time. But what was good, he was in the right place. And he was aware, as what we talked about before the show, as opposed to the looks that Brandon Williams give you, where you're just praying he doesn't get burnt. And as opposed to him, okay, he's in the right spot, but he's not turned around. And he doesn't notice the ball is there. And that's what I guess what it felt like. While Brandon Williams really has played pretty okay overall in terms of coverage, you had a guy who looked like he knew what he was playing. He looked like a cornerback out there as opposed to a guy who was very new to the position.
Yeah, and it's just something that you and I have talked about. We talked about, you know, I talked about it on our the Revenge of the Birds wrap-up show. It's not that Cooper is a better athlete or football player. He's just a better cornerback right now, and that's all there is to it. He understands the position and what to do and how it works, and that makes him at this point a better option. It's not, I don't think in the long run you're going to see Brandon Williams kind of be a bust and Marcus Cooper get extended for, you know, 5 years, $20 million. Like, I just don't see that happening. But I think for right now is Cooper can give them enough of a player that he's going to be very Jerod Powers like is what I'm trying to say. He's going to be in position to make tackles and things of that nature. He's not going to be the guy that's, you know, he's not going to be Patrick Peterson, the guy that's making spectacular plays. He's not going to be, obviously, Tyrann Mathieu or anything like that. So,
and what I like about this, and it's kind of an interesting way to do it, because even after that performance, Arians was in no way ready to say, okay, yeah, Cooper's our starter. Like, in the matter of seconds, he was asked after the game whether Cooper had done enough to kind of take over the spot. It was in the matter of seconds. He went from his response was, yeah, I don't know, we'll see. So he wasn't sure. And even now the depth chart came out. Brandon Williams is still the number one. And because he was quick to praise him. He said Brandon Williams played well. It's just that, you know, Cooper was in there. They were going to alternate series, which that's kind of interesting to do. Cornerback is not a position you typically do that. It's one of those cases where that's one of the positions. You do, on the defensive line, you rotate. Off the edge, you can rotate. Sometimes inside linebacker, you rotate. Running back, you can rotate. Receiver, you can rotate. Tight end, you can. But your secondary players, especially your outside corners, don't rotate much. And it's just a case where they're trying to make something work, and they're okay with Brandon Williams, but they don't want to settle for Brandon Williams. And so it's going to continue to be a I think it's going to be one of those things. They're going to alternate until one looks better, and then they'll stay in the game.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. I think you can get Brandon Williams on a hot streak every once in a while, and he's going to be maybe, you know, the third best defensive back on the field, and that's pretty impressive in the Arizona Cardinals group. You know, when you talk about, you probably have two of the best defensive backs in the NFL on the field 90% of the time for the Cardinals. So that's, you know, that'll be a nice thing for him. But I think what it's going to be is they're going to go with the guy that's keeping people in front of them that are not giving up the big play. And so far through two games, that's clearly been Marcus Cooper more than it has been Brandon Williams. So I think that's just where it's at right now.
So let's talk a little bit about David Johnson. Now, what did you see from him? I didn't see much special in the running game. Like, you know, he averaged less than 4 yards a carry. So, I mean, you look at what he did. The numbers say he was solid. What he had were a couple of fantastic pass plays. You know, obviously the 58-yarder was something special. Then he has the over the – he has the shove-aside highlight. He has the very receiver-like catch on the sideline over the shoulders. You know, he didn't have a great game, but he didn't hurt the team. And that, I mean, oh, that's actually technically not true according to Bruce Arians. I mean, he almost cost the Cardinals an interception. So he played well enough, but there is definitely things he could have done better, obviously.
I just don't think Arians likes it. No, I'm just kidding. It's one of those situations where, you know, you watch him. And last year we talked about his indecisiveness and trying to bounce things. I feel like this year a lot of it's the opposite. Like, he's almost too patient right now, and he's trying to, you know, give everybody time to kind of make blocks and get things stacked up. And instead of just taking the yards that are there, he's trying to hit a home run every time. So that's not, you know, what you want from him necessarily. And so through two games, you know, like you said, his overall box score is really nice. What's he at? 28 carries, 134 yards, you know, 4.8 yards per attempt is a nice number. And then he's got, you know, 141 yards receiving, 20 yards per reception. Only the one touchdown this year, so if you're a fantasy football fan, that's obviously not what you want to see. But overall, I mean, I think he's just been extremely good, but he hasn't been great, which is where, let's be honest, the Arizona Cardinals probably need him to be great in order to get to where they want to be.
And that's what they believe he can be. In fact, and I believe this is the reason for this tough love he's getting. You know, kind of the same thing that Calais Campbell got a year ago, things like that. You know, the thing that all the receivers tend to get the first year when he was there because Palmer could do no wrong is that one of the things that they were very clear about, they said, if he stays healthy and if he stays humble, he could be one of the all-time greats. This is their way of making sure he doesn't buy too much into himself or into his success, at least the numbers, too early. That there's clearly stuff he needs to work on. And so far, he's got the right mentality. After the game, the first thing he's talking about are the four or the five Emmys, the mental errors that he can count just from, you know, just from what happened during the game. So he's on the right track. And on another note, it was good to see Chris Johnson get a bunch of carries. I wrote that, you know, one of the things that the Cardinals needed to improve to win against the Buccaneers, that they needed to get Chris Johnson more carries. And it wasn't so much because they needed to give him the ball more. It needed to be in the situation. They needed to run the ball more. And that meant Chris Johnson was playing more. 16 carries, 54 yards. That's real pedestrian numbers, I know. But it was exactly what they needed.
It was. And that was the whole thing with Chris Johnson. And, you know, he needs to be able to keep David Johnson fresh. And he needs to be able to keep, you know, he needs to be able to keep the number of carries and touches down, those kind of, you don't want to call them garbage time, but like those cheap runs down. Like if you're going to run a power up the middle, like, yeah, it's great for David Johnson to run those plays, but that's what Chris Johnson's there for, three, four yards in a cloud of dust. So let's see what happens there. And we can get David Johnson in space more if you're the Cardinals. And I think that's what the goal is right now. And so when you look at it, Chris Johnson's reemergence this game coincided with the blowout, I felt like. Like, he wasn't getting, you know, carries early. So it's clear what their prerogative is still. The other interesting thing is Andre Ellington's really just not even – a thought of this offense so far, is he?
Not yet. I mean, they you see him out there for handfuls of the two back plays, and I think that's kind of where they see his role is getting him on the field with another running back to create mismatches. And he did have a nice nifty play, a heads up play from Palmer when he was starting to fall down and he flipped the ball forward, shovel pass, flipped it to Andre Ellington, picked up 9 yards. And we saw Ellington's role diminish because they took him off of punts. And I was really pleased he didn't try to return a single kickoff. So that was a win in my book. So good job, Andre. Down those kicks in the end zone. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. He's awful in kick returns. But, you know, and so I think that's what it is right now. Like, I just think it right now, you're looking at an offense that's in its fourth season, oddly enough, still trying to find its footing outside of Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald. I think that's all you know and all you have on this offense, for sure. And everybody else is still, like, again, don't get me wrong, David Johnson's phenomenal, but he hasn't put up the numbers that we had all expected. And again, I think a lot of it is us being unrealistic, right? The fans, he's going to gain 1,500 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving. Like, was that really, was that ever fair?
Yeah. Probably. Like, I mean, we're going to be honest. If we're basically what we see right now, we should probably see a 1,000-yard season on the ground and probably 600 to 700 yards through the air. I think that's a reasonable thing.
Right. And right now that he's on pace for like 1,100 rushing and 1,200 receiving, or just under 1,200 receiving. He's not going to continue to catch 70 yards a game. Like, that's just not going to happen. Just like Larry Fitzgerald's not going to catch 24 touchdowns this year. Like, there will be instances.
Suit yourself. That's happening.
Yeah. You know, but
he's going to catch all the passes. And
yeah. Well, I don't think anything's going to change. I think he's going to get his 8 receptions a game, and he's going to gain his, you know, 80 yards a game, and he's going to finish with 120 catches and or 112 catches and 100 or just under 1,300 yards and probably right around 10 touchdowns. And, like, can you ask for more from a 33-year-old wide receiver?
Not really. Not really. So, about on the defensive side of the ball, this is interesting. Well, one, I want to back on the offense. Were you as surprised as I was? Because there were three sorts of rotations. The first one was Marcus Cooper, which I was like, oh, wait a minute. Marcus Cooper's on the field? Wait, he just got an interception. Why is he playing? DJ Swearinger rotating in and for Tyrann Mathieu, which we found out is just the Cardinals in it, which is interesting why they did it in week two, because in week one he played every snap, just like Bruce Aaron said he was going to play every snap, and then they're protecting Mathieu by, okay, rotating him out for a couple of series here and there. And then what surprised me even more, which was interesting to see, was on the offensive side of the ball, is Jerron Brown taking a more prominent role in the offense. And now he's played well. He had that really big touchdown catch. But it was him on the field in three wide sets instead of John Brown and sometimes instead of Michael Floyd. He was one of the main three receivers. It's cool to see. And maybe we are finally seeing the Cardinals kind of looking forward to the future, because John Brown's been ineffective. He really has. He's been nothing. I mean, he's got 22 yards in two games. And Michael Floyd has been inconsistent. I mean, he had his week one was solid, but he's
been Michael Floyd. Let's just be honest.
He's just been Michael Floyd. So, well, does it surprise you, or maybe it shouldn't surprise us about Jerron Brown now? Maybe finally it's the right time to start putting him in the offense more.
You know, I think all it really is right now is that Jerron Brown is a more consistent route runner than Michael Floyd, and he's just healthier than John Brown. I don't know if it's, you know, the fact that John Brown is out of shape. I don't know if – I mean, it can't be that he's still suffering from concussion issues if Bruce Arians has the – you know, balls to put him on
punt returns.
Like it just can't be that, can it? But
I'm convinced that it is. It's not the concussion itself, but rather the effects of having been out a month and not getting enough training camp reps. So he's looking like this is a basically what we're seeing is a preseason John Brown right now.
Right, and so I think that's kind of what it is right now. I think you look at it and you kind of just understand that right now it's not exactly where you want it offensively, and that's kind of what I talked about earlier. Like, the only known on the offense right now, the only thing that we know that's working on the offense right now is Carson Palmer to Larry Fitzgerald. You know, Jerron Brown's looked nice. David Johnson's had, you know, a lot, you know, a couple really big plays. But in crunch time, it goes to Larry Fitzgerald. When they need a play to be made, it goes to Larry Fitzgerald. And I don't think those are designs to, like, hey, let's just get the ball to Larry. I think it's the fact that
he wins in big moments.
He wins in big moments, and Carson trusts him more than anybody else. And so it's just it's a combination of the two situations kind of meeting in the middle and creating that, you know, that reality that it's about right now it's Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald.
Moving to the defensive side of the ball, and we alluded to this, I actually looked this up. So did it not feel, because it felt to me that there was absolutely no pass rush on Jameis Winston. Did you get that feeling? And then when Chandler Jones got his cheap sack in the last couple of minutes of the game, oh, right, you know, he got his garbage time sack. And I felt that he really didn't do anything. Did you get that vibe as well watching the games, that there was absolutely nothing from the edge?
Right. Like, you and I talked about this before the show. Like, The most amazing thing to me has been the fact that, Chandler Jones has looked basically invisible except for like three plays in the first two games.
Here's some numbers. Cause I pulled up the comparisons. I got the game notes, like the game releases, and I look at them and compared from 1 week to the next. Okay. Chandler Jones's line against New England. He had a sack and a hit against the quarterback. That's it. Against the Bucs, and I felt he was invisible.
You and I both, we talked about it.
Four quarterback hits and four pressures. I didn't see it. In addition, so he had another sack. He had four QBs over there, four other plays where he hit Jameis Winston and four other times that he hurried him. I don't remember those, but that's based on coach's film review.
Yeah, and so you look at it, and through two games, you know, and everybody knows my stance on pressures.
Almost plays.
Yeah, almost plays. Like, a pressure only matters if it results in a negative play. But through two games, he has 11 quarterback disruptions, two sacks, five hits, four hurries. Marcus Golden has five disruptions. And so just to note, Jordan Plotcher from Pro Football Focus just responded to me literally right now, 10:04 PM on Tuesday nice. Evening, and said, I didn't know that the team tracked those numbers and released that information. Here's what we have through 2 weeks. Two sacks for Chandler Jones. They only have him for three hits, but they have him for six hurries. So, again, 11 total quarterback disruptions.
So it's the same number. It's the same number.
Just different. The only difference is they have six hurries. The Cardinals obviously gave him two quarterback hits instead of hurries. Marcus Golden, two sacks, one hit, two hurries. If you would have polled every single Arizona Cardinals fan, every single Arizona Cardinals fan would have said that Marcus Golden
had a better year.
Has outplayed him. No, he hasn't. And I would have agreed with you. Through two games, I was like, this guy, like, seriously? But you look at it, and the numbers from two different areas don't agree. Now, Marcus Golden only has 57 pass rush snaps. So, you know, do fancy math, and then you get your, you know.
Your pass rushing effectiveness.
Yeah, productivity, but we can do the math real quick. 5 divided by 57.
Less than 10%.
Yeah, I literally just got this. Like, so I'm not, you know. And Chandler Jones is at 12.5% in 11 disruptions in 87 snaps. That's phenomenal. So 87 pass rush attempts, he's got 11 disruptions. The Cardinals have the same number. Marcus Golden has 57 pass rush snaps, only has five, 8.5%. That's really good for a secondary pass rusher. All of a sudden, you're looking at it, you're like, holy crap. Like, that's exactly what we expected from both of these guys. Like, Chandler Jones has been extremely good by the numbers, and Marcus Golden has been good. And that's, I mean, for me at least, that's what I expected. You know, I didn't expect Marcus Golden to outproduce and outplay Chandler Jones. He's just not that type of player. Like, I've always said, he's a very nice secondary rusher, and that's what he's been so far. But, you know, both of us, if you asked us before the show started, we both would have said Marcus Golden, absolutely, played better so far this year. And apparently we're wrong. And
the eye test is wrong. The eye test is just wrong right now.
Yeah. So it's just one of those amazing things to, you know, watch and learn, and you get the information, and it's unbelievable.
So anything else that stood out for you in that game that you want to talk about before we move on and talk about the Buffalo Bills game coming up, which is a game they should win, but a game that has me a little bit on the edge of my seat because of what we've seen from the Cardinals before. Right. Anything else of note that we should talk about left for that game?
For Tampa, I think You want to really just commend the offensive line. I thought they played well. They didn't really do well in the run game, but this was the type of game that you know fans want to see because they stuck with the run. You look at it. I think it. I mean,
29 carries, David, which is you know.
Yeah, David Johnson averaged under 4 yards per carry. Which, I mean, let's be honest. If any of us ever, nobody believed that was going to happen, right? Like nobody ever saw that coming in any game, but he did. And like I said, like his rushing games haven't been great so far this year, but I think you commend the offensive line, and I think overall you just like the fact that they showed that they're still the Arizona Cardinals, that they can still play from ahead and they can still dominate teams.
So coming up next on Rise Up City Red, we're going to look ahead to the Buffalo Bills and the game this weekend in Week 3. We get the Cardinals have a little bit of road game that they're going to have on the East Coast over the next several weeks. So coming up next, previewing the Bills. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and we're going to talk about the upcoming Week 3 game against the Buffalo Bills, a game that looks and has always looked like it should be a W, but they are facing a Bills team that looks absolutely terrible. Are they as terrible as they look?
It's hard to say because I'm going to say yes, and then they're going to beat the Cardinals, and it's going to be a bad next Tuesday for the two of us. So, no, they don't look as bad as they're not as bad as they look.
The thing about these Bills teams is it's a Rex Ryan team. So they should be built great defensively, but yet we saw Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Jets completely just carve up that Buffalo defense. And we see a Bills offense that can put up some numbers. Tyrod Taylor, he proved himself to be a solid starter. They got playmakers. They got LeSean McCoy. But then you look at Week 1, and then their defense outside of a couple of plays wasn't impressive. And their offense was not good at all in Week 1. So the Bills have kind of shown both sides as not being terribly consistent. What do we look forward to? So what should we look forward against to this Bills team? Obviously, they've got some talent on the offensive side of the ball. Can they match up? Especially, well, Tampa supposedly was, and I thought as well that Tampa was going to be able to really match up well against the Cardinals and be able to keep up with them. They didn't. What to look at? Because this is a very good. This is the thing I don't like about the Bills team. They're desperate. They change coordinators. And as much as, you know, people hate Rex Ryan, players love Rex Ryan. They do. They love Rex Ryan, and they will do anything for him. So they will be very up for this game.
They will be. And the thing is, as you said, I wrote about this. I don't remember where I wrote it, what article I wrote it in, but this is as much of a layup game as you're going to get in the NFL. A team that hasn't been playing well, a team that, you know, you as the Arizona Cardinals coming off a 40-7 win should just go out and flat out dominate. A team that's changing, you know, offensive coordinators, albeit on a long week, but is changing offensive coordinators. Like, what about this game says the Cardinals should struggle, and yet you and I both are in the same place where we're like, yeah, I think the Cardinals should win, but it's one of those, it almost seems too easy. It doesn't have the same feel as the New England game because we knew how great New England is in terms of coaching, but it feels similar to like the Rams game last year where you look at it and you go, there's really no reason that the Cardinals should lose this game or even that Pittsburgh game, right? Like that Pittsburgh game, right, Ben Roethlisberger, and then all of a sudden, like they go out and they struggle and maybe they're too relaxed. And so, you know, Sammy Watkins is dealing with a foot injury that apparently can never be fixed. LeSean McCoy has looked pedestrian the last, you know, half of last year and then the start of this year. Tyrod Taylor is a freak. I mean, he's gonna give the Cardinals problems. But I just, like, when you look at it, when you watch it, there's nothing that says to me personally, like, oh, this team's gonna give a problem to the Cardinals. I mean, their defense has been shredded by Baltimore and the New York Jets. And the New York Jets was at home. So, I mean, they were in Buffalo, in Orchard Park, and got shredded. But you look at it, the Cardinals haven't won in Orchard or in Buffalo since O.J. Simpson played there. I mean, sure, this is a new team. This is
out of the night, guys. Out of the night.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you look at it, and it's just – it's one of those things where it's like it – everything makes too much sense, right, that the Cardinals should win this game with ease, that it's just, like you said, it's unnerving. And maybe it's because we haven't ever really experienced that as Cardinals fans, so we're still in that spot.
Well, but what this is the Cleveland Browns game, and they came out and played like poop against Cleveland. And this is what you have to do. This is the thing with Buffalo, with the way their team is currently constructed morale-wise. If the Cardinals start quickly, they will roll to victory. If they give the Bills any hope at all, it will be not very fun for the Cardinals because they will give that team life. That's the part that worries me a little bit, is because they have not started well. Offensively, they haven't gotten off. They haven't done what they did last year, is just go out there and on that first series – Like they did in the first preseason game, they just march down the field and look like, hey, no one can stop us. Because if they do that and they get a stop, I think all it takes is two series. Score, stop, and I think the game really from there is taken care of. But if they let them stick around, if they start out slow like they did against Cleveland a year ago, maybe that will be the sort of thing that they need to overcome like they did last year, because once they overcame that, the rest of the season, it set up the rest of the season to really kind of roll through the final half of the schedule. I don't want that to happen, but if they take care of business early, they should be able to put the Bills away, and we should be able to see some, you know, Drew Stanton time later in the fourth quarter, which was kind of fun to see on Sunday.
Right, and you know what? I completely forgot about that. I wanted to bring that up. Good call. I think that was big. I think it's big to see the change in Arians, that he's not the same guy that last year was leaving Carson Palmer in when they were up, what, like 38-3.
And they decided to get another touchdown in against Detroit just for fun. Well, right. And maybe it was Tyrann Mathieu. Maybe that ACL – with retirement is what changed his mind. He said, you know, he probably shouldn't have been out there. It should have been DJ out there or whoever it was at the time. I don't think they even had DJ. Well, he was still in the practice squad probably. So maybe that changed things because of a garbage time interception that really changed the rest of the season.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. That could be what kind of it was for him that made him – pause and reflect as who he is as a, you know, as a coach. And so, yeah, I mean, through two games, I thought we saw the worst of what the Cardinals should be this year. Obviously, like, we hope that there's nothing worse, but I think we saw what the worst of what the Cardinals should be this year. And then I think we saw what could be the best of what the Cardinals could be this year. And I don't, you know, expect them to win 40-7, but I would expect something in the 28-17 range. And you know, don't get me wrong, I think the Cardinals are much, much better than the Buffalo Bills, but a 28-17 victory on the road in Buffalo is a
impressive.
Huge number. Like, that's massive. So, you know, don't kill me for, selling them short, I guess, but I also want to see them come out and do it again. I want to see the Arizona Cardinals come out and, like you said, start fast. Like, don't fall behind this game. Don't give Buffalo hope. Come out and extinguish the hope, the fight right away, because we've seen that Buffalo can tend to fold in on themselves under Rex Ryan. So if you come out and you punch them in the mouth early and, you know, you get up 7-0, 10-0, 14-0, maybe they'll be
in for
a long day.
Yeah.
And like you said, the Cardinals can kind of roll like they have before.
So, you know, not that I thought the same thing, but if you've listened to the show at all, thanks. If you've still listened to the show, by the way, you'll know that I've been completely wrong the last 2 weeks, because I thought that the Cardinals should have won by double digits against the Patriots. And I thought they probably would cover. I predicted that they would not even cover against the Bucks. So don't listen to me. And on that, if you follow my against the spread picks, you probably should just start ignoring me, because this last week I went 3-13.
It's all right. So, I got my record to a strong 11 and, 21 on the season now. So I'm right there with you.
See, I've got 12-19-1. 12-19-1. Yeah.
So my whole thing is that I can't figure out certain teams. So like the Lions and the Jags. So exactly. Like you said, the NFL's dumb. But yeah, I mean, so that's what it is. Like I called the New England not covering. I didn't expect them to lose. I'm not saying that, but I didn't expect them to cover against New England, and I definitely did not call. I didn't think they'd cover either against Tampa Bay. I was with you. Like, I thought Jameis Winston was going to present enough of a problem that it wasn't going to be pretty, and not that they would lose or anything, but that it was going to be uncomfortably close late in the game.
Just like the Cardinals have done, like, for the last year and a half. They get up, they lose the lead, or they get close, and then they close it out strong. And that's what I almost expect every game to be, because that's kind of like how they win the games. But yeah, that should give us a wrap for this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. So if you're still listening, thank you as always. And we intend on speaking again after the Cardinals hopefully have improved to 2-1 and remain atop the NFC West, as right now everyone's atop the NFC West at 1-1. But that if you know how to get a hold of us, you listen to us for the first time, thanks. You can find us on revengeofthebirds.com, that's Seth's site, or cardswire.com, that's my site. You can find us on sports360az.com as well as on social media, on Facebook and on Twitter. Rise Up Sea Red is the handle or the site. Also on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, everywhere you can think of where podcasts can be found, you can probably find us there. For Rise Up Sea Red, that's Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, and I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com, and we will talk to you again in another week. Go Cardinals.
Have a good night.